Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Reps' defense continues to struggle as they conceded three times in the first half against Nashville on Saturday. Despite some halftime adjustments and a Thomas Chancalay brace, the defensive woes continue to hurt the Revs down the stretch as the team falls again 3-2 in Nashville. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today from Pro Soccer, it's Caleb Pongratz. Caleb, how are you today?
Very good. How are you doing today?
Minus the Revs and minus the Pats. Dunkin' Donuts made my coffee wrong this morning, so just everything is going sideways for me. So I've been better, but I'm doing a podcast, so I guess I can now. This is kind of like therapy at this point in the season. I don't think I've had anything positive to say about the team in the last couple of times I've been on, and we probably will struggle to find some positives today. So this is kind of more of a therapeutic vent session, and I know our listeners feel the same way. So before we get into our key takeaways, though, I want to tell you about our presenting sponsor, BetOnline. Football is back, and BetOnline is your number one information source for all of your sports wagering info, with all of the up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football at your fingertips with BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoffs and Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Remember, use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Caleb, let's get to our key takeaways, brought to you by The Rebellion. Go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them. And also, I believe the Supporters Summit is tonight, October 16th. If you're listening to this on Monday, I believe it is tonight at 6:30. So if you are a member of The Rebellion or the Midnight Riders, remember that event is happening and it is free for members. And there's still time to sign up to be a member if you want to go to that. But key takeaways, Caleb, what is your key takeaway from Saturday's match against Nashville?
Key takeaway going out for the Nashville game. Thomas Chancalay is still very good. That's the key takeaway that we've obviously deduced after watching that game. Overall, it was kind of a shaky game from start to finish, but it's good to see that there's a handful of players that still have adversity and can get over a 3-0 deficit and try and pull something back. So that's a positive going into playoffs, but again, still a bad result going into the decision day weekend.
It's another kind of game where it's been decided in the first half, but you see some positives and some glimmers of hope in the second half. And we'll talk about Klimpier and his adjustments later in the episode. Well, actually, why don't we just get into it now? Because, you know, with Pierre, it's a little frustrating because he makes adjustments that seem to work and he's able to read the game and change things up, but they start at such a bad spot. I mean, this 3-5-2, and my key takeaway here was going to be, we talked about the 3-5-2, we talked about doing something like that, and he brought out a 3-5-2, but his wingers were attacking wingers. He put out Nacho and Ima Boateng, and I think when we've talked about it, I know some people have suggested maybe putting Shankly on the wing, and I've said, well, you want someone who's able to get back and play defense, and you have Ryan Spalding available. I thought some sort of combination of, you know, Ryan Spalding out there, and then I don't know who you put on the right. I guess you'd have to put Nacho Hill anyway, and that didn't work out. But with this 3-5-2, you know, having Ima Boateng and Nacho, who are really pushing up the field, it left so many giant gaps of space, and the three in the back basically got spread out. You know, Dave Romney is kind of out covering that space on the left, you know, basically playing left back at some points, and that's really not where you want your best center back. Omar is just not fleet of foot, so when the defense is getting stretched, Omar is really struggling to cover ground. And then you have Henry Kessler, who I thought, all things considered, did a pretty decent job covering ground in that kind of hodgepodge of a 3-5-2. But he's coming back from injury. And as Seth tweeted out, you know, he signaled to the sideline at one point in the first half, 4-4-2. And I think it seemed pretty obvious that those center backs were just getting exploited. And, you know, Nashville figured out pretty early in the game, just put the ball down into space, into the wings, stretch out that three-man back line, and they are pretty helpless. So Klimpier, not really what I meant by a 3-5-2. We've talked about the 3-5-2 in the past, and I guess they just don't have the personnel to run out that formation. But that formation seemed doomed from the start, and I give them credit for realizing it and making the changes at halftime. And once again, we have another week where the Revs played better in the second half than the first half. But the first half was just so, so poor that really they did not have a chance. Even after Shankly made it 3-2, I don't think a lot of people had optimism. So I'm curious to see what he does going forward after this game.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that that lineup, obviously from the start, it was kind of not doomed, but it was shaky. It was shaky, obviously. And trying to get a result with that, the personnel we have, with I think we had two guys on international, or four guys on international duty, sorry, injuries of course, and then still putting out a formation or a lineup that really doesn't, like, not suit the team, but it's just all about the system change, and obviously the coaching change and the system change, and It's a real mess.
Well, I was thinking about this. I was talking about this with Sean afterwards. Really, what you could have done, because in theory, I don't really want to play Ryan Spalding and Ben Sweat as your wingbacks in a 3-5-2. You could do that. I guess that's your option, where you put Ryan Spalding on the right. But you could also put Polster as your right wingback, which I know is not ideal. But put him on the right, put Ryan Spalding on the left, you know, and have them kind of be wingers up and down. Even if you play, I don't know, I think the Nacho and Ima decisions, it seemed very attack-minded, and going on the road at Nashville really wasn't the spot I think that would work in. So just a very frustrating lineup decisions, I think, really doomed them from the start. I do have some comments here, though, from some listeners, and I'll hit on them now so we don't have to revisit this later. But Mike says, is Klimpier capable of in-game tactical adjustments? Waiting until halftime isn't going to work. And if you think back to this game, as I mentioned, Henry Kessler signals 4-4-2. I think it was in the 35th minute. 10 minutes later, Nashville scores, and that's the deciding goal. So maybe PA needs to be a little bit more early on these adjustments. You know, maybe there needs to be a decided plan B. If, you know, this 3-5-2, if they run it out there against Philadelphia and it's not working, they can kind of say plan B and they can reshift. But I think the reason why PA held off until halftime was because he needed to bring in three new players to get the formation switched up to where it could be. So I imagine, though, the other thing is that we have Henry Kessler back. Kessler is looking pretty decent. I know he only got 60 minutes, but when DeJuan Jones comes back, I imagine we're going to, in some way, either revert back to a 4-4-2, because I think Klimke is running out of time with these experiments, and he hasn't found anything that worked. And I think, truth be told, I think the team wants to go back to the old system, which, even though I think there isn't much of a chance of that working long-term without Brandon Bhai, it was working better than anything they've done so far under Klimke.
Yeah, I mean, there's... the system definitely, I think, needs to revert back to what we were doing. Obviously, we don't have Bruce at the helm, and there's obviously the personnel once they return from their international duty, and a couple of guys that have not get healthy. I think this team can make a run, but we need to see the progress right away, or it's going to turn into, hey, you were in second place for 6 months. Now you're in fifth, might not even get top four because now you need help from Montreal and you need to beat Philly. So it's turning into a mess, to put it nicely.
By the way, just a quick sidebar. I said at the top of the show that the Supporters Summit was the 16th, which is tonight on Monday. It's actually Thursday the 19th. So you still have 3 days to become a member of the Rebellion to attend the Supporters Summit. But getting back to the mess that is the New England Revolution, we did have another question here from Josh. Am I wrong to think Klimke is just saying out loud what we've all been thinking? What's our best 11? You don't know. What's our best formation? I don't know. He's gently pointing out how terribly the roster was built. I feel bad for him. And I mentioned this a few weeks ago that I think Klimke is, it's unfair to, you know, acquire a roster or a locker room that is distressed, that has gone through a very turbulent time between the Bruce Arena and Richie Williams situations. He never had, you know, he's never trained these players, and now he's being thrown into the fire down a stretch, and he's unable to bring in any new players. So I do sympathize with him a little bit, but I also think it's possible to have a bad hand and to play it poorly. And that's what's happened. I think if, you know, the Revs had a 1-2% chance of winning MLS Cup when he acquired the team, those percentages are a lot lower now. And he's had about a month to figure out something tactically and maybe work around the shortcomings of this team. And I give him credit for trying new things, but those new things just haven't worked. So I do feel bad for him a little bit, but at the same time, I think what he's thrown out there just haven't worked. So I look forward to seeing kind of a 4-4-2. And if you think about it too, you know, there is a path here. I think Kessler has come back healthy. DeJuan Jones will return back from international break. You know, you have three quarters of your starting back line. It would be nice if Andrew Farrell was healthy. We don't know if we will be seeing him anytime soon. I don't think you really want to pull Polster from the defensive midfield. So you do have a gap at right back. And that goes back to Josh's comment of, this roster was poorly built, and right back was a very glaring weakness. So maybe you move DeJuan to the right and play Ryan Spalding or Ben Sweat, probably Ryan Spalding, but it just seems like they don't have a lot of confidence in either one of them. And it's a very frustrating time because there's just a lot of deficiencies along that back line. And it's a major, major problem for this team, which is, it's basically automatic at this point that they're conceding at least 2 goals in the game.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the Revolution roster, what PA's put out, and obviously seeing some questions being asked. Like, I noticed that someone asked, I think, was it Seth asked if PA knew his best 11? Who, do you remember who asked that?
Yeah, it was Seth.
I'm sure PA knows his best 11, but you got to also take into account there's four guys injured, four guys on international duty, and the rest is kind of a mashup of which guys are in form, which guys are playing well. And it's interesting because, like, when we go to look at our formation, obviously we have competent center backs. We have Dave Romney, we have Henry Kessler. Omar hasn't done horribly this year. He's done quite well when he's on the field, bare probably one or two games. Then you look at your outside backs, and that's where the worry jumps in. You have Andrew Farrell can play there. He's hurt. You could put Matt Polster there, but he's in my opinion, horrible outside back. It's a waste. He's a better midfielder, and he's one of the best midfielders in the league when he's in his natural position. And then you have Ben Sweat, who respectfully is the new Omar. That's the nicest way to put that. And then Ryan Spalding. I don't know why Ryan Spalding hasn't been given really a shot, especially when he's the one player on this roster that has played under Clint Piette. He played for him at Reds too. Don't know why he hasn't played yet. Or, sorry, started, because he played, obviously, 45 minutes. Or, yeah, he came in at half. No, he didn't come in at halftime. He came in at halftime. Yes. Spalding came in the game against Nashville. So I'm kind of worried why Spalding hasn't gotten a shot, especially with his experience with PA. Because from what I've seen and what I've been told, it was a good one. Other than that, like, you can mess around with a formation with the guys we have that played, and things work. Like you said, we switched tactically from the 3-3-5-2, 3-4-1-2, whatever you want to call it, into the 4-4-2, and it worked. But it was too little, too late.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about Spalding is, I believe, when he went on loan to Tampa, Tampa plays kind of a 3-5-2 with attacking wingbacks. So this game in Nashville would have been a good spot for Spalding to play. He's very familiar with that formation, but instead they go with Ima Boateng, which again is kind of more of the aggressive winger, you know, attacking winger type of option, as opposed to kind of a wingback who can kind of, you know, defense first and then push up. It was kind of more of a, you know, Ima Boateng getting up the field and then sprinting back when Nashville is really hammering you on the counter. And I don't know, I wasn't a fan of the way they lined up here. And it is interesting that it seemed like it was a good spot to put in Ryan Spalding, who you recalled, and you're still not using him and you're still not starting him. So very bizarre. And you're right, they are very shorthanded. And as a result of being shorthanded, they had to make Revs 2 shorthanded. And Revs 2 lost on Saturday as well in the Eastern Conference. Was it the Eastern Conference Finals, I believe? To Columbus Crew 2. So their season is now over because they were missing Esmer and Jack P and Jacob Jackson, obviously getting called up to the Revs. So they're missing three starters, and obviously that's not great for their season either. So really disappointing all the way around. My key takeaway was essentially just going to rant about the 3-5-2 and how that was not that was not exactly the 3-5-2 I was hoping to see. I'll kind of say this, though, because this kind of occurred to me the other night. You know, right now, if you look at the Revs, and, you know, we talked last year about, because people would send in arena out questions, and they'd say, you know, do we need to move on from Bruce? And we'd say, well, you always got to think about what's on the other side of Bruce. And if you look at what we have right now, we have some players not really showing a full effort. We have constant and random lineup and formation changes. We have mid-season transfers into the team that are making no impact whatsoever. And we're wasting a pretty good season from Carlos Heel. Caleb, we've reverted back to the Friedel era.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The people, we really took for granted the last 5 years, and we have gone right back into Friedel ball. But I'm leaning into this question because I asked this on Discord the other day. Who would you rather have coach the team, Brad Friedel or Clint Piette? It's a tough choice.
I don't think it's that much of a tough choice, because I think my answer would be Clint Piette 10 times or 9 times out of 10. Brad Friedel, horrible coach, great scout. Great scout. He's great. Got us Carlos Heel. He was involved in getting Bo. Great. Love him. Got Tejan. Okay. Like, that's great. Great scout. Horrible coach. I'm a broken record on that. Clint Piette. Clint Piette led Revs to one of their best seasons. And I think if he had more time with this unit, things would start clicking. I think that's an honest truth. But do I think he should continue with the team? No, because I don't think he's done enough to deserve it. If he wins MLS Cup, yeah, it's his team. He can do whatever he wants. That's the nicest way to put it. But The coaching situation will be an intriguing one. Well, sorry, coaching and sporting director search will be an interesting one going into 2024, but obviously that is an off-season concern at the moment.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it too with Klimpier. Another thing too that's important to talk about Klimpier, you know, Revs too, obviously he had a winning record. Obviously he's done a really good job down there. But winning isn't necessarily the most important thing, as exhibited by the fact that the Revs plucked people from Revs 2 during their playoff run for a game in Nashville. You know, development is kind of the more important thing. And so for Klimpier, you know, it's just a really totally different scenario to move up and kind of make this adjustment with the Revs. But, yeah, I think you're right. If there is a shot of him being in the running for the head coaching job, I think that's gone. I imagine they will let him move back to Revs 2 if he would like to move back to Revs 2, because as you mentioned, he did a fine job there in developing players, and I think he's been a key person of this kind of academy to Revs 1 pipeline. But with that being said, I don't think he's really the guy for the senior team. And I have to wonder, too, if he even wants this job, to be honest with you, because it seems like things are going really sideways with this locker room and with this team, and it doesn't seem like anyone is happy right now. And if I'm Klimpier, you know, I probably didn't ask for this. I'm probably being stepped in because there really was no other choices for this team. So he's really taken one on the chin here, and I sympathize with him. But with that being said, I appreciate the service, Clint. Now back to Revs 2. We did get a question from Seamus here, by the way. Despite having secured a playoff spot, the end to the season feels worse than last year. I have tickets, and I don't even plan to use them for the final games. Is there optimism to be had in the possibility of finding a coach better than Bruce to lead the Revs next year, and who is that? So let's go there, and I know The Athletic had an article a few weeks ago, and it's worth noting that the sporting director is apparently the priority for the Revs, which to me, you know, I know Phil Neville and I believe Savarese is tied to the Revs job. That's what the Athletic article said, but I take that with a grain of salt, because usually the sporting director comes before the head coach. So if the Revs are prioritizing a sporting director, I think until then we won't have any idea who is in the running. But with that being said, do you think the Revs will have a possibility of finding a better coach than Bruce? And do you have anyone in mind, Caleb?
Better than coach, better coach than Bruce in MLS? Absolutely not. There's not many coaches that are better than Bruce. And obviously it's kind of tough to replace someone of that caliber. And in all honesty, I think the Revs get an MLS guy. They're going to get someone who knows the league. I highly doubt that they go and outsource somebody else from Europe or from elsewhere. Similar to like Charlotte. Charlotte is in talks with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I don't think the Revs are going to go talk to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I just don't think that that's a person or coach that's someone that the Revs will be interested in. It's going to be someone that knows the league, knows how to operate, how to run his players, is used to everything that is ongoing. And I think Gio Savarese is probably the best fit. I know the article Tom Bulgare put out was between Phil Neville and Gio were the two options. Gio led the Timbers to two MLS Cup final appearances and the MLS's back tournament title in 2020. He's a coach that knows about winning and had a positive record while in Portland. And I think that he's a coach that can bring something to the table. When it comes to Phil Neville, he's also not a horrible option. Though I feel like when he was in Miami, he didn't really get all the keys to do what he wants. And I kind of feel bad for Phil Neville with his Miami situation, because they signed Messi and then basically were like, all right, we're getting Tata Martino and get out of here. So I think Miami would have been fine if Phil Neville stayed too with Messi joining, because it's Messi. But If it came to Phil versus Gio, I think Gio is probably the better fit. The only other coach I could consider or would prefer the Revs talk to is someone like Caleb Porter, or Adrian Heath, but I don't think they'll go after Adrian Heath due to his close tie, I wouldn't say ties, but close relation with Bruce Arena. Because that's an arena guy right there. So I think they're trying to just get away from that area. So my three would be those three.
I agree with everything you said. I think they stay away from Heath. I also think not just because of the arena ties, but I'm not really too impressed with Adrian Heath's record. He strikes me as a good MLS coach, but is he really going to be a next level guy, or is it doesn't strike me as a very ambitious coach. And I shouldn't say ambitious, but I'm just not really in love with Adrian Heath's record. I think we've talked about it a little bit before. I think most of those names that you mentioned, I agree with. I think you have Caleb Porter, who's won MLS Cup. Robin Fraser took a really bad, I shouldn't say a really bad Colorado team, but he's had two really bad draws with Chivas and Colorado. And, you know, he was first place in the Western Conference 2 years ago with Colorado before that team decided to not be very competitive. So I wonder what he could do with a bigger budget. And I think that's kind of your floor in terms of like ambition, quote unquote, in a coach of a guy that might be high upside that hasn't had a good chance or a fair chance in MLS. That maybe if you give him the keys, he can get the best out of your players. I also think there's a handful of interesting names out there, like, you know, Bob Bradley, I think, is coaching a team in Norway, and his contract ends, I believe, at the end of this calendar year. So in theory, he's going to be on the market. That's a, I say, big name, quote unquote. I also think if the Galaxy let go of Greg Vanney, that's another MLS Cup winner. Like, are you giving Greg Vanney a call? Like, maybe that's a big name, quote unquote. I shouldn't say big name. I guess Greg Vanney's not a big name, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I think there is going to be a lot of coaching options. They all seem to be a little bit flawed. I'm going to throw out one more name, though, because I think it's a very, well, there's two names I'm going to throw out. One, I'm going to be lazy and say Jesse Marsh. I don't know if they can land him, but he's out there. And I think that is a ambitious coach that I think is very highly touted. And I think if you get him on the phone and say, you've got a very big budget, we have a lot of money that we've made from Petrovic and Turner and Tejon, and, you know, we're going to have a couple DP spots opening up, and, you know, here you go. I think maybe he answers that call. I don't know if he comes in, if it depends on if he wants to come back to MLS or not. But the other name that I think is interesting is I believe Oscar Pareja's contract with Orlando ends after this season. And it's very bizarre for a team to be in second place in their conference and to be peaking at the right time, and that coach is not under contract. And I imagine that Orlando is trying to retain him, and he, at this stage, is just going to test the market in the offseason. And I think New England is going to be one of the more interesting jobs that's open. So I wonder if Oscar Pareja, that seems to be someone that might make their way up. And that might be one of the names that I think, if we're talking about coaches in MLS, I think that is a name that would really interest me. And I'd also be curious, too, if Jim Curtin didn't sign his extension, if he would be on the short list for New England, because Philadelphia, you know, we have the let's get this over with Derby this weekend, with Philadelphia having a good chunk of their core players ready to leave Philadelphia, and New England in their mess of a season colliding on Saturday. Boy, that's two teams that I think are really running through the motions, and it's kind of a lame duck season for both of them. So, you know, I wonder if Ernst Tanner and Jim Curtin didn't sign extensions and they were both leaving, if the Revs could poach one or both of them. But they have unfortunately been locked down to Philadelphia, and they have some work to do this offseason.
I agree with all those as well. Good points made. Jesse Marsh, I believe, right now is working for CBS. Doing Paramount Plus stuff for Champions League. So that would be an interesting one. I actually like that one, but I don't know if he's interested in leaving Europe. But good points. I like it.
TV gigs are cushy, so I don't blame him if he wants to ignore Robert Kraft's call and just stay on TV. So, Caleb, we unfortunately have to get back to the game. I'm sorry. We've been living in a fantasy world. We don't have to
I
talk
know.
about this crap. Let's get to some positives, though. Jacob Jackson Johnson started his first MLS game, and I thought he did pretty decent. Porter says, only one game, but is Jackson impressing? First off, let's just start here. What do you think about his performance?
I think, so obviously I live on Twitter, obviously. Anyone who is blaming Jacob Jackson for any of those goals does not know what it's like to be a goalkeeper or be on a team where you have a really good goalkeeper and a woeful defense during that game. Jacob Jackson shined. I think he played really well. He made a couple unbelievable saves on questionably one of the MVPs for this year. He made four diving stops to stop Hany Mukhtar. And I would argue if he wasn't in that, we would have lost this game 7-8-9, maybe nothing. Because at that point, are we really going to go try and score two goals? Probably not. I really think that Jacob Jackson did well with the keys that he was given. And I know he got praise from Polster, Farrell, and... is one other name I'm forgetting from the quote that he said about saying, like, this is your chance. I think he took this chance, and I think he delivered. And it kind of shows what we were getting on when we drafted him. When we drafted him, I believe, 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Two years ago. Now.
Yes. 2022.
2022. It kind of shows that the Revs were smart in picking a goalkeeper in the first round. He was 24th overall. And I think that from what I've seen with him for Revs 2 and then what I just saw with him, obviously, with the first team, like, he's a good goalkeeper. And I think that with a full-strength 11, he would do exceptional.
I agree with you 100%. And just to give some additional context, according to FootMob, Nashville had 3.05 expected goals on the day. So the three goals really is kind of reflecting of Nashville's performance. As you mentioned, first two goals definitely had no chance on either one of those. I guess the second one, you could say he could have come out of his net, but really that was on the center backs for leaving Sturridge alone. We'll complain about that goal later because I have a lot to say about that one. The third goal, maybe he could have come out a little bit sooner, but that was a breakaway one-on-one chance. So I find it difficult to blame a goalkeeper. And that Dax McCarty shot, I mean, what could you know, come on.
You can't do anything about that. You really can't.
Insane goal. So, yeah, I think Jackson was fine. It is worth noting, I believe he had five saves. Well, let me see here. 10 shots on target, 3 goals. So I guess he had 7 saves. According to FootMob, 3 of them were diving saves, including one that he tipped the ball around the post. I believe you mentioned that goal already, or that shot already. So he had some very good moments in this one. Mike from New Hampshire says, is Jackson the move at goalkeeper? Peter says, should Jackson start against Philly? I'm going to just kind of editorialize here and say, you know, in my opinion, if Vatsleek is not ready, which it doesn't seem like he is, you know Earl Edwards, you know what you're getting out of him. He's a fine goalkeeper. I think you prefer him to be your backup. He's not your long-term solution at goalkeeper. I think from here on out, if Vatsleek is not starting, Jacob Jackson is. You need to figure out what you have in Jacob Jackson as a young prospect. You need to see if he's going to make the leap up to either, even if he's not a starter, if he can be a backup in MLS if you need him in a pinch. I think you get Jackson as many starts. If Vatsleek is not starting, I want Jacob Jackson. Caleb, what's your thoughts?
When looking at, obviously, the Revs' goalkeeper situation, it's a tough one, because from what I've heard about Tomas Vasilik is he is healthy. It's just his fitness level is not up to Hitchcock's it's not up to his preference. I don't even know what that means, but that's what I've been told. And I've also been told that Vasilik has not been training well. So I wouldn't put in a goalie. I don't care how experienced he is if he's training horribly. And looking at contracts, obviously, like Vasilik, we have him through the end of the year with 2 club options. Jacob Jackson actually is out of contract in December. He is out of contract December 31st, 2023, according to Transfer Market. Earl Edwards Jr. has another year as well. And after that, those are your 3 goalkeepers going into 2024. In my preference, Jacob Jackson should be the one for the remainder of the year. Earl Edwards Jr., great player, great, even better person. Love him, but I think that going into this playoff run, you need to give the kid a shot. And again, like you were adding on, should Jacob Jackson be promoted from MLS Next Pro starter to an MLS backup? I think so. Looking at, obviously, the Reds 2 roster, too, they have Max Weinstein, who's 19, and Nico Campuzano, who's 25. Both of them are exceptional goalkeepers. So I think that Reds 2 will be completely fine if they miss out on one of them. Jacob Jackson leaving that team and moving up. But I really don't think Earl Edwards not should be, but like would be a starter on this team. So in my opinion, give the kid a chance. Don't start Vosslick or even put him on the bench until he's one, fit, and two, training well, and three, attempt to show yourself, show it. You're not only show yourself, show your teammates, and show the fans that you are what is good for the future of this team. That's what I'd say for Jacob Jackson.
I will add, transfer market sometimes is, the dates are a little messy if they do not have exact contract details. So Jackson is on his rookie contract, and usually that's 4 years, and there's a ton of team options. So I believe he probably has a team option next year. Again, I can't confirm that, but transfer market with some contract data that's not publicly available, they'll just throw out a date. Or sometimes with team options, they list how long the guaranteed contract is, and they don't include the team option. So just want to give that kind of quick caveat there that I believe Jackson is still under team control for next year.
He has a couple team options.
Yeah, but I think you're right. He's achieved everything he can at Revs 2, and so you need to figure out, okay, is this guy being elevated to number 2 for 2024, or does he have a future here or not? Because he's been there 2 years, and you're right, Max Weinstein is the next guy in the pipeline, so you don't want Jacob Jackson blocking Weinstein if you don't have any interest in playing him at the next level. But so far, so good. One start into Jacob Jackson's career, I'm fine with it. Also, Alfred said, I'm sorry, but I'd rather see what Vasilik has rather than Jackson, especially if he's getting the nod because Revs 2 coach liked him. I will say that. I think that's the implication there is favoritism, but I do think that there is some truth that Vasilik is just not ready. And I think that's a pretty damning indictment for him because he was supposed to be a game changer instantly. That was kind of the appeal to him. And the fact that we're going over to our long term project here is, you know, not a good sign for Vasilik. I don't think it has to do with favoritism, because I think, truth be told, I think Klimpier is really coaching for, you know, I don't think he has a chance at the first team job at this point, but he obviously is trying to win. So for him, there's no, you know, I don't care how much you like Jacob Jackson, you got to play who gives you the best chance of winning. So I don't think it's a favoritism thing. And it would be nice to see what Vasilik has. But I think as you said, if he's not ready, he's not ready. And learn something about Jacob Jackson as opposed to a guy that, you know, is not going to be in form and is not going to help you win.
Yeah. The last point I'll add to that, going on to that, Vasilik has not played in a game since May. He has not played in a game since May. Jacob Jackson has played in 13 games and is a hot hand. I'm going with the hot hand. And argumentative, if Vasilik's not ready and Earl Edwards is dealing with an injury, I'm calling up Max Weinstein, because that 19-year-old is really, really, really good. And you could see, if you go to Reds 2 games, or if you went to Reds 2 games this year, you could see glimpses of all three. You could see Brad Knighton in Max Weinstein. You could see Georgie Petrovich in Max Weinstein. And you could see Matt Turner in Max Weinstein. Max Weinstein, if Jacob Jackson isn't the kid for the future, Max Weinstein is.
I agree. He's a very good prospect, but I got to say, the fact that Vasilik is, I think it's just really, really damning that he is not ready to go. Because I think the whole intention of signing him was for this season. It wasn't for next season. And so I it's very discouraging to see whatever is happening here. And by the way, we got one more comment. Anime Stoner says, not a stab at Jackson, though he wasn't that bad. But what do you think is the thought process of putting him in over Earl Edwards Jr.? We touched on that. And over Vatsleek, who didn't even travel. What is going on with that position? I just want to say it's weird. Vatsleek was on the bench 1 week and then is gone. So I don't know if he's re-injured something. I don't know. I mean, from what I'm hearing similar things, Caleb, which is that, like, he's just not training well. And I don't know if that's an existing injury. I know some people have pointed out that I guess he failed a physical at Huddersfield, which is why he wasn't re-signed, which I didn't know about until people pointed that out to me. Maybe he's re-injured something. I don't know. But regardless, it's bad. He's not on the injury report. It's just bad. So and if you're having these problems now, who knows what problems you're going to have. If he has a long-term injury, you might have an issue next season too. So I think you need to figure out what you have in Jacob Jackson. You know what you have in Earl Edwards. Figure out what you have in Jacob Jackson.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Teal Forever scenario: Revs make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals or deeper. If this happens, I realize this probably won't happen, but if it does, what changes need to happen between now and then? I.e., what formations are used, who performs better or differently, who gets healthy to make this happen? I'm just going to throw this out here. We haven't talked about this position yet, but and when we talk about what's gone wrong with this team, we talk about Bruce Arena, we talk about Klimpier, we talk about Richie Williams, we talk about selling Petro, we talk about Brandon Bye's injuries, we talk about the formation changes. We really overlook that the striker position has gone cold. The offense right now is Thomas Chancalay and Carles Hill, and sometimes Gustavo Boa if he's out there. That's essentially the offense right now. Giacomo Vrioni has not scored in a long time. Bobby Wood has not scored in a long time. A major difference between the beginning of the season and the second half of the season post-League's Cup is that the strikers were scoring, whether it was Bobby Wood or Vrioni, they were scoring goals, and they were scoring goals at a good rate, and they haven't scored in a long, long time. So I think what needs to change is we need to start getting some more production from the striker position, as well as all the other things I've ranted about in terms of the back line, the formation, figuring all that, figuring out how to get organized in the back. It's really just get organized in the back and score goals up top. Those are the two things that we need to do. Basically, just get better on offense and defense. That's all you need to do. Caleb, anything you want to add?
Yeah, strikers need to be much better. I would say the only three players that haven't dropped in form are obviously Chancalay, Carles Hill, and I would argue Matt Polster. The only issue with Polster is they played him out of position. Polster's still the same guy. It's just you're playing a center back. Or sorry, you're playing a center mid at left back. That's right footed.
You might as well play center back at this point.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Other than that, I think obviously our strikers need to get their heads out of their asses, start scoring goals, and put, again, similar to like I said for the goalkeeper, play the hot foot. Play the hot foot. Who's doing well in training? Play the one that's scoring.
All we need to do is we need our goalkeeper that we signed over the summer to magically get in form. We need the injuries to heal. We need the tactics to figure itself out. We need to get better on defense. We need to get better on offense. That's all we need to do. just a little bit of everything. And by a little bit, I mean a lot of everything. By the way, one other thing too. Joshua Bulma didn't even make the bench yesterday for Revs 2. Is that correct? I think someone told me he didn't even make the bench.
Yes. So I have context to that. Josh Bulma is dealing with an injury. He was at the Revs 2 game. He was in the stands. He's dealing with a leg injury. The hope is that he will be maybe ready for the Philadelphia game, as he is a first team player. He may be ready for the Philly game, but again, we'll see.
You know, we Super Draft Talk really is for the off season, but you want to talk about a miss, Joshua Bulma, and I think a lot of that is because they tried converting him to right back, and that's not his position. But it is interesting how he has fallen out of everyone's mind. But at the beginning of the season, when he was drafted, Bruce Arena was talking about him like he was going to challenge for the starting eight position. And then they got Latif Blessing and Noel Buck emerge, and he just kind of faded into the background. But I mean, you talk about a guy that, you know, complete opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of expectations at the beginning of the year and where he is now. I mean, he's a complete afterthought. But I wonder if, you know, talking about the 3-5-2, you know, maybe Bulma could have played a right back position in the 3-5-2 where he doesn't have to play as much defense. Anyway, I digress. Mike Kennedy.
Yeah,
good.
I think he's I think Bulma was a good player for Revs 2 this season. He's one of their focal players at why they succeeded. But I think that he should have been given a contract similar to someone like a Santiago Suarez, where he plays the year in Revs 2 and then joins the first team. Kind of one of those things. That's one of the blessings and the curses of having the second team, is you can get players that go to the second team and then can elevate to the first team. And I think Josh, with a little bit more experience, will perform in MLS. But again, I think he needed a little bit more time.
But I think he was a Generation Adidas player too, so his contract was automatic. But you're right. I mean, I think playing at Revs 2 probably helped him, but it is very interesting how they talked about him before the season and where he is now. I mean, he was expected to be an impact player on this team, and he really isn't. And I'm not sure what his role is going forward on this team, because I think he is a winger or attacking midfielder, and they have a chock full of them at the ref. So he might be a good player, but I just don't know what his path is going forward for this team. And I don't think it's wingback, or else we'd be seeing him, although he is dealing with an injury, as you mentioned. So I didn't have that context. I didn't realize he was injured, but I think I'll give him a pass for not being available. Mike Kennedy, the Revs made Nashville look like 1970 Brazil in the first half. How and why does this keep happening? Is it tactics, personnel, incredibly bad luck? Would love to have your take. I don't want to hammer this too long, because I feel like we've complained enough, but just that formation, and there was just space available all the way up and down the wings, really stretched out the three center backs horizontally. And I think that first half was really just a very, very poor setup. And the team, and the other thing too, this formation, I don't think it would work if you had a full preseason, but there's more of a chance of it working if you have a full preseason. They had a week worth of practice with it, and it was just doomed from the start. So I don't know if we need to hammer that anymore. Any thoughts on that, Caleb?
The defense needs to be better. That includes midfield and obviously the center backs. I know one key comment earlier that I saw was about the Sam Sturridge header.
Oh, let's get into that though. While we're on that, because I want to rant about this play. Andy from Revs Nation: how does a team rolling with three big center backs give up an absolutely free header to Sturridge on that second goal? If you haven't seen it, which, you know, don't look it up, I'll describe it for you. But it's just a simple long ball down to the left corner, cross to the center, Sturridge wide open. I mean, Omar was next to him, and then I think just kind of wasn't paying attention. Sturridge is able to just kind of take a couple steps back, and he's perfectly in between Omar and Dave Romney, I believe, and just heads it. I mean, it was a wide open header within the 6-yard box. It would be hard to miss that shot, and I don't particularly think there was anything super skillful or super complex about that play. It's just a simple Nashville boots it long. Nacho is up the field a little bit, so of course, you know, I forget who crosses it in, but Nashville's able to get to that ball. Nacho is not a defender, so he doesn't really close it down very well. It's just a simple, as long as that cross is accurate, it's a goal. There's no skill in that long ball over the top. It's a simple cross and it's a simple finish. And there's nothing Jacob Jackson could do in that, in my opinion. Just lazy defense. Very, very easy goal for Nashville. It's the easiest goal I've seen in MLS this season. Just poor defense. So that's my rant.
Yeah, I think there was a miscommunication on that play between Dave Romney and Omar Gonzalez about whose mark it really was. But again, you can't have a free header in your box. That's soccer 101. You learn that at U10. Defend the boxes, you win the game. And the Reds didn't defend their boxes. That's how you lose the game.
Yep, two veteran center backs. And so it... those things happen, but just needs to be better. Steve McGrogan says, step coach needs to stop running experiments. I really like calling Klimpier step coach. You're not my real coach. Alden says, was Jack P good? And he also says, can we replace Ben Sweat with Peyton Miller next year? I don't think Ben Sweat has any chance of coming back next year. Just not just because of Peyton Miller, but I think Ryan Spalding is better than Ben Sweat. So if you're going to keep one of them, one of those players, you're keeping Ryan Spalding. And I don't think you need two left backs, but Peyton Miller is being elevated to the first team next year. So I absolutely think Peyton Miller can replace what we're getting out of Ben Sweat. In terms of Jack P, I honestly don't have any notes on Jack P. Caleb, do you have any thoughts on Jack P's performance?
Jack P was okay. I think he performed well, but I would have preferred him be with Revs 2 than be with the first team. I think that it's more important to have him for an important playoff game than have him for an MLS game. And I think he did well. I think he moved the ball when he was on the field in instances. But again, I wouldn't have gone with that experiment. And then adding on the Ben Sweat Peyton Miller thing, I think Peyton Miller will be a starter next year. And I wholeheartedly mean that. Ben Sweat probably, in my opinion, should not have a contract next year. And when it comes to Spalding, Spalding's obviously better than Sweat. Spalding performed well with the Rowdies when he was on loan, and he's done quite well when he was here. So I'd be intrigued to see, if we don't keep Spalding, what is he worth? But I would love Ryan. I love Ryan Spalding. I don't want Ryan Spalding to leave, but I guarantee those are questions that will be asked.
It will be interesting to see what happens. And maybe if DeJuan Jones is sold, maybe they're able to keep Ryan Spalding on the roster. But three left backs is tough to hold. And I think Ryan Spalding has increased his value. So, you know, is he potentially a trade chip for the Rebs? I don't know. It's, you could loan him back out to USL and see how he does there. He's certainly a good player, and I think he should be getting minutes somewhere. But it's tough to know what the Rebs are going to do with him, and it's not like he's a young prospect like Peyton Miller. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that in the offseason, because he's kind of too good to dump, but not good enough to play over DeJuan Jones, and he's not your long-term project like Peyton. So Porter also says, oh, by the way, Jack P, 8-for-9 on passing. He only had 18 touches in 45 minutes, but was 3-for-5 on ground duels, 0-for-1 on aerial duels, 2-for-2 on tackles. He had an okay day. Nothing too bad here, just in the underlying numbers, but I can't say I remember, you know, thinking he had a performance to die for. So sure, I'll give him a passing grade. Porter, while the Revolution 2 season comes to a close, who do you see as standout players that can make a break into the first team in 2024? Caleb, you've already said Peyton Miller. I think that is the I would also add Jacob Jackson. If Jackson is able to perform here, I think there's a chance that maybe he goes in as the number two next season and gets some starts. If there's an injury to Vatslik, who apparently is, you know, maybe he'll be in shape by next season, maybe not, but Peyton Miller, I think, is the obvious choice there. And then do we want to say JAS? I don't know if he's going to get a first team contract, but he had a phenomenal season down there at Revs 2 as well. And considering the Revs problems at striker, it would not shock me if they promote him into kind of a backup role next year. So I think those are the three guys that I'm paying attention to.
I would say for players that I would monitor, other than the players you mentioned, Victor Souza was a iron man for Revs 2 last year. He led the team in minutes. Was, I believe, fourth in passing, sixth in interceptions. He had a goal defensively. He was a rock. And his teammate with him, Pierre Caillé, again, another rock. I think both of them minimum should go to preseason with the Revs next season. Both of them have been class. And then another young player that I think the Revs should look at is Malcolm Fry going forward. I think he had an exceptional year in his first year as a pro, and I think those three names are definitely people to look out for sure.
Steve says, good to see Kessler back out there. How serious do we think Andrew's injury is? Also, Romney appreciation. I second the good to see Kessler back out there. In terms of Andrew Farrell's injury, it must be serious because they need outside back depth right now, and he's one of the few players that can kind of play that right back spot. And also, I don't know what their contingency plan would have been if one of the three center backs went down, who had moved, probably Matt Polster, I guess, since he can play anywhere that according to Klimpier. So, but in terms of Andrew's injury, I don't have a status update, but it must be serious enough that he's not even on the roster. Because you think if he could go in there and give you 30 minutes in a pinch, he would be on the bench in some form or fashion. So, yeah, I don't know if it's season-ending injury, but it's certainly not a good thing, and I wouldn't be shocked if he misses the Philly game.
Yeah, just the only thing I know in regard to that, after the Columbus game on October 4th, I did see Andrew leave the stadium. He did have quite a heavy limp in that right leg. I don't know what the injury is or what his timetable is, but you could tell when he was leaving the stadium and saying bye to some fans, he was hurting. So.
Steve also says Carlos Hill seemed to have had more desperate passes that got intercepted lately. Or am I just seeing that more because of the way games have been going and the state of the team? Players are disjointed and not used to playing with those who have been out. I think the formation has to do with a little bit of that as well. Just to give you some context, though, Carlos Hill was 86% passing, 57 for 66, but really not a ton able to get into the box. He had 11 passes into the final third, which sounds great, but he was 0 for 11 on crosses. He had no chances created. So really, really disappointing kind of offensive, I'll say, performance from Carlos Hill. He did have the shot that led to the Shankly second goal. So I guess we can give him some credit for that. But I think this wasn't Carlos Hill's best game. I don't know if I'd define them as desperate passes, but it certainly seems like the offense is out of sync. And I think we've seen Carlos Hill getting the ball into more dangerous places a lot better than he did on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Hill's playing his game. Obviously, players around him need to get better, but I don't think it's more desperation. It's more of just trying to be on the same page, and I think that things would be changed.
Steve also says, did you notice the players arguing with each other after silly giveaways? Not a happy team. I agree with that as well. Usually after a turnover, you see two or three players kind of stick out their arms and saying, what are we doing? Things are not going well right now for this team. Chad says, it's over. Gamble day, every day says, team is screwed. Yeah, fair enough. Does Matt Turner save that? Says, what are some fun activities to do on a Saturday evening in autumn instead of watching the Revs? That's a very good question. I don't know, because this is all I do. I do a podcast, so I have to watch the Revs, unfortunately. I would say that college basketball is starting up, but well, I'm a Bryant basketball fan, and if you know anything about Bryant basketball, our head coach isn't doing very well right now, so I'm not looking forward to college basketball season. So I could use some recommendations. Caleb, you have any ideas on what we could do Saturday nights instead of watching this team?
Nothing pumpkin related because you'll annoy Tom Quinlan. So instead, go on a hike. Go enjoy the great foil fo foliate foliage
Foliage.
foliage foliage of the outdoors.
Well,
Go enjoy
he
the
said evening
outdoors.
though. You're not gonna go hiking at night, Caleb.
Maybe you're climbing a mountain at night and you want to do an overnight on the mountain.
Well, I don't recommend that, but does Matt Turner save that? Let us know how your overnight hike does, and if you survive, let us know how that goes. Derek says Frioni should not play another game in a Revs jersey. He also says hashtag extend Gustavo Bo. I think Frioni is going to play a little bit down the stretch here, even though he's not super impactful. But the Gustavo Bo thing, look. An all-time, I don't know, it depends on how your definition of great player, but obviously a very important player in Revolution history. He's top 10 in goals, really impactful signing for the Revs, obviously was a key piece in the Arena era. It's time. It's time we move on, and I think that spot is either going to Shankly, or I know you've reported, Caleb, that it's not, triggering his purchase option wouldn't lead to a designated player. If he's a TAM player or not a designated player, you go out and you find another designated player. I think Gustavo Bo, if he is extended, he is going to be well below the designated player threshold if he's going to remain with the Revs in 2024. And I'm not sure he wants to do that. So, you extend Gustavo Bo at a reasonable cost. I think at this point you have to pay him like he's a backup striker.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where age comes into factor as well as performances and time. I think Bo should be re-signed. From what I've been told, Chankalai is not a DP unless his contract gets completely restructured. That's literally, I know people that have seen the contract. That's who I talked to when I made my article about it. I think if we can't get him on a TAM deal, that's Bo, that is, that's unfortunate, but I think that overall, it's tough. It's really tough. Going into this year, we're going to have to make a lot of changes, and it'll be intriguing to see which direction the team goes in to make sure that things are done correctly, and I think that the Revs are more than capable of going out and getting someone, but only time will tell.
Tim also says Chankalai is awesome. He tracked back into the Revs box to make a defensive play around the 75th minute. Love the defensive effort. Good example for the rest of the team. I think he's a must purchase, whether or not he's a designated player. He has really come in and made a great impact. And as I said earlier, him and Heal are basically the offense at this stage. Chris Felucas, do you think Nashville will take Sturridge for Vrioni? Vrioni played for Juventus after all. McCoom played for Juventus in the academy system too, right? I mean, two Juventus players for Sturridge. I mean, come on, Nashville. That's a no-brainer. Am I right?
Hey, people forget Wilfried Kaptoon played with Messi at Barcelona. But
that's a good point. We need to sign him too.
Let's get him back.
Let's get him back. Maybe he can play right back. Paulo says, second game in three that Mark Anthony Kay has been trash. Time to bench him. I liked T-Mac. Can he crack the starting 11 against Philadelphia? On that one, I don't know if Buck is back for the Philly game. But yeah, I mean, I personally, Kay to me, I'm good with. I think at this point, I wouldn't play both him and Polster. I think you play one of them. I guess a lot of it depends on what formation you're playing, but I'm fine with giving Tommy McNamara a role out there and, you know, seeing if him and Polster can kind of recreate their 2021 magic, quote unquote. I'm good with Mark Anthony Kay. Caleb, what's your thoughts?
Mark Anthony Kay needs a little bit of work, but I think that I doubt he'll get benched. I really do. I think him and Polster in that midfield is really what's going to hone in how offensively we perform. With Buck coming back, that would make a difference. Hark's obviously still out with a fractured Adam's apple, timetable unknown. So the midfield's kind of a position where you need your best players. If T-Mac can fit in there, let's try it, but I doubt it.
Paulo also said, feelings on a DeJuan Jones, Kessler, Romney, Ryan Spalding back four. I think that's the answer if Farrell's not available. If not, I think you put Farrell out on right back and hope he can kind of hold down that position since he used to play there so often. But I think that's if you're going back to a back four and you're doing either a 4-4-2 diamond or you're going a 4-2-3-1, if you're going with a four-man back line, I think that is the answer to the puzzle if PA is going there. Any disagreement with that?
I agree.
New England, any Revs grudge life or GL on Twitter. What has Belolo done in his 20 years with the club that warrants Kraft's not even discussing his job status with him? I don't mean handle things the Kraft don't have to worry about it. This is another question where I feel like the answer is in the question. But this is referring to Belolo did a press conference last month when all the Bruce drama happened. And I believe someone asked him, I think it might've been someone from The Athletic. I don't remember exactly who, but they asked if he had assurances that he would be returning next year. And essentially he said something like, I've never discussed my job status with the Crafts. And I think some people took that to mean, he is tenured in and he has all the job security in the world, or it means he has no job reviews. I think that just means it's not common for the club president to be told whether or not he's coming back next year. So I didn't read a ton into that comment as much as other people did. But in terms of why he's there, I think he is involved in two things right now, at least. One, the World Cup bid, which he was successful at. And two, the stadium, which they have not been successful at. But I know that there is a lot of workings going on around Everett. It seems like, you know, I see people online talking about Everett, and that's been rumored for years, and I'm sure he's knee deep in negotiations with that. So I think when things are going bad with the club, everyone just looks to fire the coach or fire the sporting director or fire whoever that person's boss is. And right now, since Bruce Arena is gone, and I think Kurt Anolfo is expected to leave at the end of this year, or his contract's up, so I think a lot of people don't really have as much anger out towards him. The next guy up, there's a lot of anger directed towards him. But so I want to say I can't really evaluate his job performance too much, but I think the answer to the question here is he handles things so the Crafts don't have to worry about it. I think that's his value to the club. He kind of oversees the business side of things, and whether or not you think he's failing at it or succeeding at it, it's hard for me to judge from where I'm sitting. But I do know attendance is going up, and it seems like they're, you know, doing well and profiting off of these player sales. So I think on the business side of things, I don't think Robert Kraft has any real issues with it. So that's probably why he's still there.
Yeah. Also, he's brought us to 4 MLS Cups in his tenure. So I would argue that he's not the problem.
Well, again, but then we're talking about on the field. Is he responsible for on the field product? And I think the way I view it, there's kind of a separation there between on field and off field. And the other reason I say that too is because if he was evaluated for on field performance, he would have been gone with Mike Burns and Brad Friedel in 2019. There was no direction of that club. And that was a lot of people think we're approaching that point now. And a lot of people see this as a low point. And I think it's really just because we had so high expectations midway through the season and they've just completely fallen flat. But in 2018, 2019, that team was very bare bones. There was really no direction. At least now you can kind of say there's an academy. There's kind of some structure in place. There's going to be money for a new head coach to come in. 2019, they cleaned house and he survived it. So in my mind, he's not evaluated for his on-field performance. And when you're not, when that's not really part of the factor, you know, it's easier to stay long-term. So I think that's kind of where it's coming from. You know, is the team in the green? Yes. Did Boston get their World Cup bid? Yes. Did he get a stadium? No. To be determined at best. It's hard for me to look at the team's successes and failures and try to attribute it to Bolello. So with that being said, Charles Maddock, there's a supporter summit on October 19th at 6:30 PM for members of recognized supporter groups that are in good standing. Just a reminder, you can become a member of the Rebellion at anyrebellion.org. Porter says, what questions would you like to see answered at the Rebellion Supporter Summit? And Caleb, are you going to the Supporter Summit? I don't know if you have a question in mind.
I will be going. I haven't really formulated my questions yet, but I have a couple people that have reached out to me and how I'm going to formulate a couple of questions. So we're going to take it as it is. And I think it's going to be a good thing for fans and people to get questions answered that they want to hear the answers to, though that those answers may be given back in a, well, the team thinks, well, it's worth asking it. Obviously, the Rebellion already said that it won't be broadcasted, but that's all I can add for that so far.
Yeah, I think for me, too, I would like to kind of know why this the Bruce investigation went from a club thing, which seemed like it was an internal issue between, I don't know if it was coaches or, but it seemed like it was all within the Revolution organization and it was elevated to Major League Soccer. I'd be curious to see if they had an answer to that. I don't think that's been answered. Outside of that, I don't have a ton of things because I think a lot of questions have been asked at the Bruce press conference from last month that kind of got no commented. And we talked to Corey. I will promote that podcast. If you haven't listened, if you want more information on the summit, we interviewed Corey Cloutier last week. Definitely go listen to that if you are interested in what they hope to gain from that. But I think I just rehash a lot of those questions, and hopefully there's a little bit more transparency in private with supporters than there is with media. I think that's the whole point of it. I know some people are upset it's not streamed and there's no media coverage, but it's not really for me or media in general. I think it's so the team and the league can speak directly to supporters. And I think that gets you a little bit more transparency when it's behind closed doors. So Caleb, we have one more thing to talk about here. Henry Kuetzler signed a 2-year contract extension. The contract runs through 2025 with a team option for 2026. The deal uses targeted allocation money, and that can be applied to signings, extensions, or extensions, provided the salary and acquisition costs are more than the maximum salary budget charge, which in 2023 is $651,200. So basically, Henry Kuetzler has signed a 2-year contract extension with a team option for 2026, and he is making more than $650,000 because there's no acquisition costs, obviously. So he's getting a bit of a raise here. I'll get your take on this first. What do you think of this Henry Kuetzler extension?
Absolutely love it. Henry's done quite well to prove that he deserves his contract extension. I know injuries are a concern there. I also do know some degrees of how much he was asking for prior with negotiations with Bruce. I don't know if those numbers are similar. Like you've already stated, it's over $651,000. Note, we have two other center backs that are on similar money. Andrew Farrell is at $651,250. And where is
Romney?
It? Sorry. Yep, I'm looking at it. Sorry. Romney.
Oh, it's around the same.
He's on $625,000 with $671,000 in guaranteed comp. I personally, I don't know the number, but I would estimate this number to be in the sevens or the eights. This is an $800,000 type deal, not a $600,000 type deal. You take his age, his performance, his he obviously is in some U.S. men's national team camps as well. Kessler is a guy to lock down. It's an important one, and I think it's a great deal.
And I think we talked about this. I talked about this with Andy a few weeks ago on what you would do in terms of approaching Henry Kuetzler. And I kind of floated the idea of maybe you do a 1-year stopgap extension where maybe you can get him on a little bit lower money and get him that 1 year until he reaches free agency, and then he can get a bigger payday beyond that if he stays healthy, if he performs to how he's capable. Because when he's healthy, he's fine. He's a starting level center back. You know, him and Romney made a great pairing at the beginning of the season, and then his injuries flared up again. So I think I estimated it around $500,000 for 1 year, and seeing where that goes. And essentially that 1 year would just get Henry Kuetzler a free agency, and then he can go make, you know, his full amount, essentially, what, you know, is basically a 1-year bet on me deal. I think I compared it to Adrian Beltre a few weeks ago when I was on the show. I think with getting 3 years of team control, you are having to pay a little bit more of a premium. And what this strikes me as is a similar deal to the Farrell or Romney deals, which is essentially when you can apply TAM, you buy down that budget hit. So if you are paying Henry Kuetzler, I'll say $700,000, you can apply TAM to half of that contract. So you can buy him down to 350, and so his cap hit is now 350. If you signed him at $500,000, you can't apply TAM to that. You could apply GAM to it and buy it down a little bit, but I think TAM is a resource that they struggle to use, or at least they don't really want to use a ton of it. And so they're essentially using this resource to sign a player to an extension and buy down his cap hit very low. So it strikes me as the Revs saying, you know, we really want 2 or 3 years of control here. We're not looking for a 1-year deal and then losing you to free agency. We're looking to lock you down for your years of your prime. So it's 2 guaranteed years with a third option. If Kuetzler is still bogged down by injuries, I think this is not a great deal. But if he's able to stay healthy and if he's able to perform how he's performed, I think this is a pretty reasonable deal. And as I say, you're getting him for his prime years. You're getting him for 2 years. And then if he's still performing at that level, you can extend it a third year. So I also wonder too, and I think Kyle McCarthy made this point on Twitter, from a Revs perspective, who's negotiating this deal? Is it Kurt Anolfo? Is it Bilello? I don't think Bilello has a lot to do with the on-field things, as I just talked about, but it's interesting because Anolfo is leaving. And so you wonder if, you know, Anolfo was given a directive, make sure you sign Kuetzler before the end of the season. You know, if you're out the door, if you're not sure of your status, are you really that concerned about overpaying a player in year two of a contract? So I'm curious to see. It is a weird time that a new coach is coming in, a new sporting director is most likely coming in. I don't think it's going to be Kurt Anolfo. Usually when that happens, you let a coach come in and negotiate his stuff, or you let a sporting director come in and bring in his players. But here they are locking down Henry Kuetzler, essentially making sure he's here for the transition, which is a very interesting thought process there. So, yeah, very interesting. But overall, I think whether or not this is a good or bad deal comes down to, can Kessler stay healthy? I think that's more or less the, whether this is going to be a winning contract or not. So,
yep.
Caleb, final thoughts.
Yes, sir.
What do you want to leave our listeners with, and where can people find your work on online?
You can find my work at prosamerica.com. You click on the MLS section, then click Revolution. All my articles are there. You can also follow me on Twitter at Caleb, C-A-L-E-B, Pongratz, P-O-N-G-R-A-T-Z, 10. I'm 37 followers away from 1,000, so if you could hit a follow, that'd be amazing. Overall, I think that the Revs are – it's not time to be worried yet. I think that there is more to give in this season. I want to see some good positives from this Philly game, and I think if – we get our quote unquote, get our shit together. I think it's not over yet. That's the best way to think about it. It's not over yet.
You and Andy, come on this show and you're so optimistic. Oh my goodness. It kills me. Oh my God.
Optimism.
No, I will say, I think this is the last chance for the team to get right and figure it out. And I was looking at the standings too. They are in fifth place. Hang on. Let me pull it up. They're in.
Yes, they need a win against Philly, and they need CF Montreal to beat Columbus to finish top four and host two games.
Yes, and then Atlanta is playing at Cincinnati. Maybe Cincinnati's not very motivated. So I as long as the Revs tie, if the Revs tie and Atlanta wins on the road in Cincinnati, Atlanta will pass them, but I'm not so sure about that. And then it's basically impossible for Nashville to hurdle New England because Nashville would need to win. The Revs would need to lose, and Nashville would need to, their goal differential is 8 right now. The Revs is 11. So basically there'd need to be a 4 goal differential switch between those two for Nashville to hop over the Revs. So the Revs are looking at a top 5 spot. And to me, if they're able to beat Philadelphia, they would need to win. They need to beat Philadelphia by 3 goals to pass them. And Columbus is expected to win. So it looks like the Revs are going to finish fifth. But my overall point here is if the Revs are able to finish the season on a high note, get fifth place, figure out their tactics, figure out their defense, I'm a little more optimistic. But with that being said, I think I haven't said a positive thing on this show for a month or two. It's bad. It is very bad. And I'm a little jealous that DC United season ended 2 weeks ago. I'll put it that way. With that being said, you can follow us on Revolution Recap. You can also follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. Be sure to follow our friends at The Blazing Musket on Twitter, at Blazing Musket, and subscribe to their Substack to receive every piece of news into your email inbox. Be sure to follow our friends at The Rebellion on Twitter. Go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them and the Supporters Summit on October 19th, not October 16th, October 19th. And also, of course, if you haven't listened to it already, go listen to the podcast I did with Corey Cloutier last week about that event. Also, thank you to our presenting sponsor, BetOnline. Remember to use our promo BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And also, if you have not left us a review on iTunes or Spotify, we would really greatly appreciate it. Thank you to the two people that left us reviews on iTunes last week. It made our week. That's it. Actually, that's it. That's all I have for you guys this week. We will be back following the Philadelphia game. That is going to probably be a Greg and Sean episode. So make sure you listen in on, knock on wood, hopefully a Revolution win, because we are desperately in need of one of those. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and go Revs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.